Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Lore Lodge Official Podcast. I am your host, Aiden Mattis. This is Aiden Thornbury. And joining us today from across the pond is Ryan. Ryan, you want to introduce yourself to the people? Yes. That was my first exposure to you, was one of your Alexander Sympathids.
You good?
Apparently not.
You're making me check my hydration. Good lord.
Oh my god. They can't hear him, apparently.
Great.
Even though he's showing up.
Yeah, he's showing up.
How can they not hear you? Ryan, can you talk? It's I just don't... but the thing is, like, we're... It's not on our side, you know?
Is it... Let's make sure it's outputting. Yeah, I don't even know. Is that output capture being...
Everything we hear, they should hear. Can you, here, remove that, remove that.
Let's go. Just
delete it. I hate Streamlabs so much. Alright, now go to add. Okay, go to audio output capture. Add.
New source.
And go to device. Yeti.
Which one's the Yeti?
Sorry, it's, wait, hang on. Yeah, it's that one. Blue USB audio 2.0. Now close it.
Do you want to do that, or is it...
It's that.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, close it.
Got it.
All right, Ryan, can you talk for us again?
Okay, we how we doing?
It's showing that we can. Now, it's showing for us.
Yeah, on my screen, it's got, like, the little green light to say it's recording and sending audio.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, we can hear you through Discord. It's just a matter of our Discord call going into the stream. That's the problem.
Oh, okay, Taylor says it's working now.
So I guess we should just do a new audio.
Yeah, we'll just do the intro
capture
every time. Oh, my God. It says a little loud, but we just fixed that. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Lore Lodge Official Podcast. I'm Aiden Mattis. This is Aiden Thornbury. That's Ryan. Ryan, tell us who you are.
Hello, I'm Ryan, otherwise known as the illustrious... History Daddy, although not the illustrious bit, and otherwise known as the guy who simps for Alexander.
Which is, of course, a glorious way to be known.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
So obviously you've been doing TikTok for a few months, like at a high level, right?
Yeah. Properly, like, I think I really started to blow up about August last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was when it started to go from a couple hundred people to, like, out of nowhere I had 15,000, and then it's just snowballed from it. I think we're nearly at 50k now, which is still small, but
it's a fun experience.
Yeah. Oh,
it's small, but it's significant. You know, it tells you're doing something right. You're on the right track, and especially if it came from you, like, shot up to 15,000 and now it's been steady. Yeah. That's how you know you're doing something right.
I find it goes like, and then like, and then it just shoots up and plateaus, and then shoots up and then plateaus.
Or you're like me, where I'm netting about an extra 5 followers a day now because I have people unfollowing and people following. I hate TikTok so much.
Yeah, that's annoying.
it's like we're not going to show your videos to anybody new, and also we're going to have people unfollow you. But, you know, that's the way of the world. But what we have to talk about today is, of course, the most important aspect of all of this. Alexander the Great and the simping for him. Tell us why you simp for Alexander.
So I don't know if you would have ever seen it, the TV show called Horrible Histories.
Yes.
Based on the books by Terry Derry.
Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, it's Terry Derry, isn't it?
Long ago.
The glorious days. I first saw Alexander, there was a sketch, I call it the Skinny Mandria sketch, where Alexander's just listing out all of the cities, and they're pointing out all of the cities that he's conquered and named Alexandria. And by the end of the sketch, his mate's going, well, maybe we could, name it something else. And then, Alexander hints that he should name it after him, and then he goes, well, if you actually conquered the city, you could name it Skinny Mandria. And then, obviously, I found that hilarious as a young child.
Right.
So I then went, okay, I'm going to look this up. And the fact that he was just as arrogant mm-hmm. and, up himself as the show described, I fell immediately in love. I mean, I have a very bad judge of character, but so I was immediately like, this man is amazing.
Right.
And that just led me to an obsession with ancient Greece, to much to my parents' annoyance, because every time they put on Hercules, I would immediately sing Heracles over the top, because I was so annoyed at the Disney pronunciation, which is also why I overpronounce a lot of Eastern European words, because my brain's like, I have to get this correct, and then it overdoes it, and then someone's like, this is just...
You've overdone it. You've made a mistake. It always, he is one of those figures, though, in history that, he was definitely arrogant, but did he not earn it?
He definitely earned it. In fact, he did have a humble moment. Do you know the philosopher Diogenes?
Yes. Yes, I love this story. Tell it. Yes, tell it right now.
So, Alexander obviously heard of Diogenes, because Diogenes was famous for just wanting nothing, and all he wanted, and in fact, the only possession he had was a barrel and a bowl, until one day he saw a child scooping water out of a pond, and he went, I don't need the bowl, threw the bowl away, and then just lived in the barrel. Anyways, Alexander heard about this and was like, I have to meet this bloke. So he gets taken to Diogenes, and he just sort of stands over Diogenes and goes, hi, I'm Alexander, you've probably heard of me. And Diogenes looks up and goes, you're in my son. Alexander, completely humbled, goes, if I were not Alexander, I'd be Diogenes. And Diogenes goes, well, I'd still be Diogenes. And it's just like this absolute moment of... And Alexander, to his credit, took it in his stride. He found it hilarious and then just walked off. He definitely was a bit... you can't have conquered that much and not been a little bit hurt by that. But he just walked off. And that's probably, other than the Gordian knot, is my favourite Alexander story.
Yeah, and since we're brought up, why don't you tell us about the Gordian knot?
So the Gordian knot was pretty much... I'll give a very brief account, because I don't know the intricate details, because I always forget the intricate details. But long story short, the Gordian knot was the knot that it was said whoever could untie the knot would conquer all of Asia. However, when shown this, Alexander was never given the specific rule set of how this works. So he just took out his sword and sliced it in half, which... by technicality,
that is untying.
Yes. Technically, it's untied.
I mean, it's, in his defense, he did go on to conquer all of Asia and everything else. I think my favorite, part of all of it with Alexander is that you have a guy who started off basically with not nothing, but Macedonia was not a particularly large kingdom, even after he became hegemon of all the Greeks.
I mean, for the time
he ends up controlling Afghanistan. The man was playing Crusader Kings in real life. Bactria, calling the Greco-Bactrian kingdom Afghanistan is a little bit of an exaggeration. But at the same time, you've got a guy who, He hopped over and, just kind of... This is a man who... Why didn't he go into India?
Well, that was mainly to do with the fact that his army was we're really fed up with the fact we haven't been home. Half of us haven't seen our families. I mean, half of them... There was a big chunk of them because... I do warn, I do go on small tangents, so we'll try to stem them. That he tried to marry off a big chunk of his military command to Persian wives once he conquered Persia, which backfired horrifically because it turns out women who have just been conquered and have all their husbands killed aren't too keen on marrying your men. So there is something they're not really into. So a lot of his men had also have like Persian families that they're low key want to get back to and make sure, you know, haven't run away with like a load of their wealth and the rest of the main soldiers. Because you've got to remember at this time period, the baggage trains normally had families at the end. Alexander wasn't as big on it because he didn't really like feeding large armies. So all of these guys were just like, we want to turn back. Like, I'm not going to die for any further. Alexander was like, this new land is amazing. I want to conquer all of it. If Alexander had had his way, he would have probably... I don't know if he would have made it for all of India because obviously it's a very different terrain. And the battles he fought there, he did win, but not as successfully as he had been. Don't think... I mean, there's some real fanatics out there who are like, he would have conquered China if he had had the chance, but I don't think he could have pushed that far. I think his army would have become tired. I think if he had survived further, a lot of people disagree with me, and this is a very controversial thing to say. I think he would have pushed west because he would have... was like the early sort of Etruscan... Romans like started, they're not nowhere near as powerful as they are, would become, but like that sort of prowess, he would probably see that as a challenge, and the West and the Celts and everything would be enticing to him. So I think if he had lived longer, he wouldn't have moved east, he would have moved west.
Yeah, I definitely, looking back at it, you know, it was the correct decision to not go for India from a strategic standpoint. Going for India would have been Napoleon going for Moscow. Like, it just would have gone horribly for him. And at the end of the day, I do wonder, you know, had he actually survived the journey back, had he made it back, first of all, you wouldn't have had the issues with the Diadochi yet. But, I mean, the guy could easily have conquered Carthage, could easily have gone... I mean, Carthage probably would have been the hardest because of just where it was regionally, but he could easily have gone back, marched up the Illyrian coastline, and then down into Etruria, and... probably had all of it.
I think he probably would have entered into an awkward alliance with Carthage, because you have to remember, like, Carthage was now probably looking at places like Egypt. Like, Alexander walked into Egypt and was pretty much treated as a liberator. It was a similar situation in Judea, which the Seleucids would cause absolute chaos with later on. But I think there would have been a semi-alliance. It definitely would have broken down, but... I don't know if he would have tried to attack Carthage. I think he would have focused more, because again, like, Carthage is a viable trading partner for Egypt. So I think that those open plains would have been far more enticing, like in sort of northern Europe, and as you go towards the steppes, probably would have been more enticing to him.
But do you not think that eventually, like, I guess my question is, if you look at the history of the Roman Empire, it took them from the second founding of Rome in 390 BC. It took them from 390 all the way through to, I think they conquered Judea in like 68 BC.
Yes.
It took them 100 years to do what Alexander did.
Yeah.
Do you think Alexander could have done it in his lifetime, what Rome did?
I don't think he would have taken... like Gaul and stuff like that. He definitely wouldn't have taken... the Germanic tribes hadn't really established themselves that much at that time. So he might have been able to take Northern Europe. He would have taken Italy easily, 100%. The Etruscans and the Romans at that point. And the Romans probably would have put up a decent fight. You have to remember, the only sources we have are obviously later, and the closest I have is Pyrrhus of Epirus, who the Romans said was the closest they ever came to fighting Alexander. And if Pyrrhus had had the actual strategic mindset, he made the same mistake Hannibal did. He didn't push on Rome when he had the advantage. If Pyrrhus had done that, he would have taken Rome, which says to me, with Alexander, with a much stronger force and a much better tactical mindset, probably would have taken Rome with ease and bite the rest of Italy also. But the only point of contention I could see would be Spain. and maybe Sicily, and that would be where Carthage and Alexander would come to blows, I think. But he definitely wouldn't push to Britain, because you have to remember the Romans didn't really want Britain. That was only there to make, I can't remember which emperor actually was that went through Britain, but that was only there to make him look good. Nero wanted to pull out. Nero was really big on, like, if Boudicca had won, Nero would have pulled Rome out. So I don't think he would have pushed that far west, because it just wouldn't be worth it to him. But he definitely would push just past Italy, I think, and a little bit north, but he wouldn't conquer, like, up north.
With Massalia there, he would at least have a Greek foothold on the Gallic coast. So I could see him definitely pushing a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, he was so ambitious as a figure that, like, I wonder, not necessarily, you know, I wonder if he would ever choose to stop versus, you know, would he be forced to stop?
That's true. Yeah, I'm thinking of it too much. I'm looking at his strategic mind more than I am his ambition, which, yeah, no, I suppose there was quite a few times his ambition overpowered his strategy and his tactical mind, that I will admit to, yeah.
What do you think the world would be, how do you think it would be different if he had never succeeded? If he had never died, sorry. If he had never, because obviously if he had never succeeded, the world would be different in a much different way, but if he hadn't died in it was 323, right?
Hang on.
I believe he died in 323.
I believe it was 323. I believe it was 323.
If he hadn't, what do you think the world would look like today?
Yeah, it was 323. June 323. I don't believe there would be much difference, purely because this is going to upset all the Roman fanboys. The Romans took a hell of a lot from the Greeks. The Romans did take a hell of a lot from them. They did make it their own, as I was schooled on by Roma the Omnia. But we would have far deeper Greek influence, or Hellenistic influence. In fact, you probably wouldn't see the proper Greek identity, because Europe, instead of having, like, an overall Mediterranean influence, and then obviously a Germanic influence, which would precede the Celts. The one thing Alexander was very good was convincing people, the scene in Rogue One, which is like, congratulations, you're being rescued, please do not resist.
Right.
I think you would have a Greco-Celtic culture emerge. Because he would conquer, but he was much better at assimilating, whereas the Romans were much better at making you Roman.
Right.
Whereas Alexander, obviously, because he's doing a speed run, right? He's trying to do a Minecraft speed run. So he understood that he had to respect culture more. He's one of the first leaders to have a unified currency as well across the empire. So that'd be, if he had lived, the main difference would be a deeper connection to ancient Greece, a lack of a modern Greek identity, and a more Hellenic world overall, with different subcultures a lot stronger. So you wouldn't just have like Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, like Germanic overall, Slavic. There would be a Greco at the start. Most of those, because it'd be so deeply wedged in. If his son could control it, and we don't really know much about his son, because his son didn't get a chance to do anything because of Cassandra.
I think that's a great segue too, because Alexander's death is a very mysterious event.
Yes.
I remember growing up, I was taught that he died of malaria.
I was always taught he died of alcohol poisoning.
You heard alcohol poisoning?
Yes.
Interesting.
Alcohol poisoning. Holes in the stomach caused by the alcohol. In fact, I've had two versions of that where he died of alcohol poisoning and died because someone poisoned the alcohol.
Jeez, they were... It was brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously his death is the topic of a lot of mystery. He clearly died from some sort of illness, whether that was alcohol poisoning or malaria, or and I'm not hardline on this. I don't really know what happened. I don't think anybody, we probably never will know what happened unless we can find his body. But we can't find his body. And that, I think, is fascinating, because obviously his body was being transported to Alexandria when it was lost.
Where did it go? I have theories.
That's why you're here. I want to hear your theories.
There was a particular saint, who, again, I said earlier, I forget names, like nobody's business, but there's a saint buried in Venice. I think it might be St. Mark's tomb in Venice. There's a particular saint's tomb in Venice. However, when they was doing a little bit of archaeology, they discovered some Hellenistic artwork on the walls, and there was a couple of shields. And obviously, the internet went, "What if it's Alexander's tomb?" And if you look it up, I'm gonna have to do it up as I speak. If you look it up, the imagery is very clearly of a certain conquest.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why I can't share the images with you, can I?
You can tell me what it is, then I can look it up.
That's why I've tried, so I can describe it, because I need to be able to describe it. So basically, it's the first image is you can see the phalanx wheel, and you can see the actual phalanx being in place. So it's clearly Hellenistic marble and clearly Hellenistic artwork. It might not be St. Mark's. It might be another. No, it is St. Mark's too. Neither here nor there. And so obviously the main current theory is that Alexander was moved to Venice, or his tomb was reused for St. Mark, because I believe St. Mark was himself moved from Alexandria. I'm not 100% sure, but the running theory, and it's the one I personally believe, is that Alexander's body is buried within St. Mark's tomb. I don't know why they would want to hide him, but obviously he's technically a pagan symbol, so I don't know, but then you're getting into millennial conspiracies, and I don't want to go down that road.
I mean, it's a fascinating idea. I'm trying to find the exact picture so I can take a look, but St. Mark's was built, that's medieval.
Yeah, I know. The idea is that he was moved into St. Mark's Cathedral. That's the theory. Obviously, it's not.
So that would require that somebody took his body when it was being transported, kept it somewhere secret for a thousand years, and then...
That's I will admit, definitely some fall downs in the theory.
No, I'm not. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just I'm trying to think who, what would be the utility of keeping his body?
Because it's someone that strong. Here we go. From the Independent. I'll put the link in Discord. And that's got the rough story. This won't mess up if I send it over to Discord. Well, it won't mess up the sound. Will it?
Certainly won't mess up the sound.
All right, okay. This is interesting, because I found some of the artwork from the tomb, and that is definitely a Regina son.
Yeah.
That's not questionable. Oh, so they're saying that's the Greaves, that's the Zistan, and that's the shield. Interesting.
Yeah, it's suspicious, isn't it?
Yeah, that's...
That is interesting.
So that would be... So strange. And you gotta, where would it have been prior to that, you know?
There's a couple of theories. There's a couple of, obviously there are a couple of gaps that I'm not 100% on. I think that it would be because it's a power symbol. Because it's if you own Alexander's body, if you have that in your possession, people are going to take you seriously. Because it's just that link. It's that subconscious link to.
Well, it was very common throughout Christianity in Europe as well. The having the body of a saint was very important.
Well, I was going to say if I took Ulysses, I'm using the Latin pronunciation because I'm pompous. if I was to take that, and say, like, and I went to Italy and I was like trying to revive the Roman Empire, it's gonna take a subconscious link, because I'm like, look, I have Julius Caesar's body, take me seriously. And if right. I just turned up and like was like, sup, I'm gonna reform Rome, even though but the both times they're probably gonna look at me like, you okay?
Right.
But they're gonna take me a bit more like seriously and go, oh no, he does mean business, because he's gone and found Julius Caesar's body, whose body is also missing. We don't have.
I did not know that. I didn't know that we didn't have his body.
No. If you look it up, he was rumored to be in this particular object, which the Pope broke open, and they couldn't find it. He is allegedly buried in a couple of different locations. It's like Robin Hood, where Robin Hood's allegedly buried in a couple of different locations. We don't effectively know where his body is.
Right, of course. So
it's weird. There's a lot of, like, we don't know where Genghis Khan's body. Just going properly into conspiracies. We don't know where all these really, really important figures of history are.
You gotta wonder if that's like, if that was deliberate, if these people who knew that they were going to be extremely famous, you know, if you're Julius Caesar, you know that you've cemented your place in history. You gotta wonder if they had their final wishes, like, you know, if they had told friends, colleagues, you know, when I die, tell people I'm being buried here, but put my real body here, so that they wouldn't be defiled after death.
Like,
especially with the way that pagan societies viewed that, and how your burial circumstances often could have an effect on your, you know, the state of your body at burial could have an effect on your position in the afterlife. Like, I could totally see them, you know, pulling a bait and switch, you know, having this immaculate sarcophagus being put into some giant mausoleum somewhere, and then the actual body is buried under a farmhouse.
Yeah, more than likely.
I mean, to really reinforce that, Genghis Khan, we know for a fact, did have his, like, body, so, like, everyone that was at his funeral was then killed, and then his body was buried by, like, some random guy who, when he came back, one of his sons was like, you done it, and he was like, brilliant. And then the ancient Egyptians, after they realized everyone was stealing their stuff from the pyramids, that was when they was like, okay, here's the amazing stuff, I'm actually buried under a pile of dirt, just unmarked over here. But there is maps to know where it is, because they needed to have it, like, checked and stuff. Because obviously, the way... I'm not 100% on the Egyptian religion system, but you get what I mean.
It's confusing.
Yes, it's very confusing.
I used to have a much better understanding of it as a child, ironically. Because I read a lot of Egyptian mythology, and then I haven't since.
Fair.
I've been getting a little bit more into it as I have been researching early Judaism, because early Judaism has a lot in common with Sumerian, Canaanite, and Egyptian religion.
Yes.
Which, again, people go on to be like, oh, well, that proves that Judaism is a, you know, ripoff of so-and-so. And I'm like, nah, we don't know who was first here, actually. Like, all of these are pre-written religions. Like, pre-writing religions. So we don't know which came first. But I do want to use that the topic of Alexander's death to talk about one of the other big important events of that time period, which is the fact that after he died, his empire immediately fell apart. So I got to ask you the question: who's your favorite of the Diadochi?
Antigonus. 100%.
You got to tell me why. I don't necessarily disagree, but you got to tell me why.
Purely because he came the closest to reclaiming the entire empire. Mm-hmm. And this is where my Ptolemy hate comes in, because it was a little bit of, like, Ptolemy was really shifting alliances. Not so much he was in the battle. So I think you actually, Antigonus' last battle was up against Lysimachus, wasn't it? I might be mixing up names.
Yeah. For those who aren't familiar, let's lay out who these people were. The Diadochi were Alexander's closest companions, his generals, the top men in his army. That included Lysimachus, who ended up being king of Thrace, Seleucus, who ended up being king of, for lack of a better term, Asia, and so basically southern Anatolia through the Mesopotamian region, as well as the Levant. And then Ptolemy took Egypt, and Antigonus had Macedon. That all of them? There's four.
I don't think Antigonus actually originally had Macedon. It was Cassander that took Macedon.
Was it Cassander?
Yes, Cassander, because Cassander allegedly killed his Alexander's son, and depending on what story you believe, allegedly killed Alexander.
Yeah, I definitely knew about him killing Alexander's son. I didn't know that. Didn't know about the Alexander connection.
Allegedly,
allegedly,
because it's not a through the ancient Adrians. Allegedly,
We need to get a button that pulls up a graphic of an ostrich. Yes. Every time somebody says allegedly on the show.
Yes.
That is something you will only get if you watch American and Canadian television, but...
Yes. And once we get a Stream Deck, I think we can actually do that.
I have a Stream Deck on our Amazon wish list. If anybody wants to buy us stuff off of our Amazon wish list, it's in the AidenMattis.card.co, just saying.
We need more sound panels.
We do need more sound panels.
Anyway, moving on.
Moving swiftly along. So you got to tell me why Antigonus? Is it his claim? Is it because he was the closest, or like?
It's purely because he was the closest, and he also taught Pyrrhus of Epirus, who I also have a very soft spot for. Mm-hmm. Even though Pyrrhus of Epirus actually gets me more views than Alexander does sometimes, because even more nations in the Balkans claim him,
which none of them should.
Exactly. In fact, in my Pyrrhus of Epirus video, I was genuinely shocked on YouTube when I didn't get anyone, because I openly called him the last Greek warrior king, which I thought
it's accurate.
Is true. That's what kings and generals call him, and they have some pretty good sources. So that's my biggest reason. Even though Antigonus and his son, which was Demetrius. Demetrius would end up butting heads with Pyrrhus. That we wouldn't have Pyrrhus of Epirus if we didn't have Antigonus first. In fact, Antigonus the second, which is another reason why Antigonus, because again, it all leads in to this, like the final confrontation of Pyrrhus. Antigonus the second wept when Pyrrhus of Epirus died, because he was reminded of how amazingly close Antigonus got to reclaiming the empire and actually uniting it, and then was just pushed down by other lesser generals. And because Pyrrhus had been killed by some lowly, like, you know the story of Pyrrhus dying, he was fighting
struck in the head with a roof shingle, right?
Yes, in the chest. He was struck down from his horse in the chest by it. He was fighting a random townsman because he'd charged into this town. The mother threw the shingle down, it hit him in the chest, he fell to the floor, and while he was on the floor, he was beheaded. And Antigonus II saw this as horrific. Like, bearing in mind, this was, like, ancient Greece was honour above, like, even the medieval period would look at ancient Greece and be like, oh, wow, they're into honour. Like, honour-bound stuff. And, like, the fact he'd done that, when Antigonus II's son came towards him with Pyrrhus's head, Antigonus II was like, that's disgusting. You know that happened to our family. Like, you shouldn't have more respect for your enemy. Like we're going to kill him, yes, but do it respectfully. Which is a weird concept to us in the modern day.
Yeah.
But I think in a weird, like, it's oddly useful.
In the modern day, when we fight people, like, we've conditioned ourselves societally that if the person we're fighting is evil. We've gotten rid of the concept of, like, that war doesn't have to be because your enemy is evil. It could just be because there's resources that you both want, and there's no good way to determine who gets them other than to fight for it. That's not to make a comment on a current war that's going on right now. That is a general statement.
But Aiden, how could you possibly kill someone for something that seems so civil?
I don't know. Apparently with a roof shingle.
It's the idea of honor, right up until World War One was really instilled in every single person, because it's honor for your country, it's honor for your king, your queen, your emperor, like your family. If you don't go and fight, you're not fighting for your family, for your country. You should be proud, and that obviously kind of spiraled in the mid 20th century, which was what. But that honor bound is why we were ready to go into the Horrors of War, and when people came back. You have stories of people going absolutely crazy still, even from, like, ancient Greece, and that you can find stories of what is clearly PTSD. But because of that honor-bound sense, and obviously a lack of understanding in medicine. Hippocrates, if you look at some of his notes, he understood mental health way better than we would for thousands of years after him.
Mm-hmm.
But that honor bound sense meant it just wasn't talked about, and you were going to fight for the gods like that. Right. That, and so as once that was lost, I think that is why now, instead of heroic stories of the Argonauts setting off on mm-hmm. quests, or of people leading charges, even in the Falklands, I suppose, were last sort of drabs, and the heroic stories of war. Mm. You have now, in the modern age, in the 21st century, you have stories like Franz Stigler and Charlie Brown.
Mm-hmm.
You have the stories like the Battle of the Bulge, and even for its horrific inaccuracies, Saving Private Ryan and Fury and stuff like that. Because now we've come as a civilization to go, is it worth it? Is the, mm-hmm. the nation state, is our religious belief, is our government worth fighting for? And I think the only thing most people would say is for family, and that's why in World War II, everyone switched up for, you're not fighting for your country, you're fighting to defend your family. Mm-hmm. The Nazis are going to come for you.
Exactly.
And that's why, sorry, I went on a bit of a tangent there about honor.
No, you're fine.
Yeah.
We love the tangents.
I am very good at tangents.
So are we.
we're all in good company, because we are all three people who could go on tangents for far too long. So have no worry. The entire point of this show is a tangent. So
I do want to know, because obviously I have my Alexander pretty well, and Ryan is over here having wet dreams about him. So what do you have questions about any of this time period? Is there anything you've heard that you're curious about?
Honestly, a lot of it's just learning. I had a general base understanding of Alexander the Great, as in he was a guy who existed who was really good at being a leader. My scholarly education really did not focus on Alexander the Great. None of my history classes really focused on anything prior to 1200. So a lot of the things that I've been hearing now, and just generally being friends with him, is stuff that I've never encountered before. So it's just kind of interesting. No general questions. I mean, with some of the video that gave me some information, and honestly, I'm just finding this entertaining and interesting to listen to. If I think of questions, I will ask.
Okay.
As of right now,
to take a moment to talk about questions, since at a certain point tonight, I don't know what time it is.
It's 7:43.
Yeah, in about 15 minutes, we will be getting to the question and answer section, which, of course, the standard practice is that we will answer Super Chats first, and we will get as many questions that are not Super Chats as we can. The show is at a hard limit of 8:30 tonight, because in the Discord, we are doing movie night at 9 p.m., so, that is something else you should know. You can go to discord.gg/thelorelodge to join that.
What's the movie again?
I believe it's Monty Python and the Holy Grail, but I could be wrong.
Ooh,
but I just wanted to slip that in there while we have a quick second, too. And I do want to hop on to what you just said, because there just is, this entire period of history from, the death of Alexander in 323 up really through kind of the Macedonian Wars, in my opinion. I guess the Punic Wars also. But I guess up until the Punic Wars, that just doesn't get talked about in school. It's like Alexander conquered the world. And then 100 years later, nothing happened for 100 years, and then Rome.
Yeah.
And that's just it's so fascinating to me, because the Wars of the Diadochi are so interesting as a concept. The fact that the Seleucids were constantly fighting the Ptolemies, and nobody was getting anywhere. And then the non-successor Greek states that emerged out of this, Epirus, the remainder of the cities of the Hellenic League, and then you've got Syracuse off doing its own thing, and Massalia doing its own thing, and over in the Black Sea you've got the Archebosporus. Just all of this period of history where there's all these things there that just don't get brought up in school.
Here's how little Massalia is spoken about, especially in the UK. I didn't know Massalia was a thing until I was learning about the early Celtic cultures 2 weeks ago. I genuinely didn't know about Massalia.
Did you watch our video on early Celtic culture?
No, I have not. I'm ashamed.
You should watch our video on early Celtic culture.
What did we just record before this?
Just before this, we recorded a video on, oh yeah, we recorded, that wasn't early, but we recorded a video on the, the beginning of the English conquest of Ireland. So
there's a fun little fact that, because I do, if we get time, I do want to talk a little bit about folklore if we get a chance, because there is the fun little time.
Let's do it.
I do have a little bit of Irish heritage.
Let's do it.
Obviously, my favourite story is of King Arthur.
Hmm.
And my middle name is Arthur, and my first name is obviously Ryan, which means little king. So I love, was my favourite tidbit is I'm technically little King Arthur.
Love
that's
to see
awesome.
It.
It's my favourite tidbit. But yeah, no. If you want to go into ghost science, Willie, I can talk about
it. Yeah, let's go. Let's talk about it. Let's
yeah,
talk
now's
about
the time. We got 15 minutes before question time, so let's kick it.
Let's start off with a particular. So I think I was talking about the one I said on the chat last night, actually, of when I was I think I was about 6 or 7. Me and my brother used to have bunk beds. You remember bunk beds when that was a thing that parents would choose. So I woke up and I remember seeing like it looked like a large set of curtains. Oh, that's my phone should have been silent. Apologies. And it looked like there was a load of curtains, and I was like, "Why is there curtains in the middle of the room?" And then I sort of like woke up a bit more. I looked up, and I can just remember like getting to the point where there should have been a face, but like wasn't any indications of a face. But I knew where it was looking, and it was like looking at my brother in the bunk above me. And I was like, "Huh?" Did the kid thing, threw the covers over, and like slowly peeled them back, and then it was like looking, and then I watched it move down. And like look at me again, no face, and I'm just like, nope, did the kid thing, and then I pulled covers back one last time, and it was still there. And for some reason, right, bearing in mind I was terrified, for some reason as a child I just went, well, if I put the cover over my head and go back to sleep, it might go, and that was what I did. And like weird reaction, if it was now I probably, you know, would be trying to, you know, punch it, like doing
right.
something, but like that was the weird kid reaction. And the other story going into it more often. So, I used to do loads of paranormal stakeouts, and none of them had any effect apart from this one place at a park, which I won't name because I will end up doxing myself. where we was on the stakeout, and me and my mate had just gone for a whiz outside this particular hut that was meant to be haunted, but it was the best place to go without anyone, you know, like, because British police like to hover around and catch you for menial stuff.
Right.
So we walk back out, and coming out of this bush, we see a dog, and we're like, oh, wow, it's like, but it's a really jet white dog. It looks like, if you've ever seen the Dark Crystal, the big beasts, where they like come out and they've got the big wings sort of thing, look like that. And then in one fluid motion, just goes like that. In like on all twos, and then looks like someone in a baseball cap and shoes, and just carries on running, one fluid motion. And that obviously freaks out. At the same time, we did also see what we called the woman in white. We saw a random woman in a hut, and that freaks out. We never went there again. And then I think my last story of the hundreds that I could tell by, I don't want to take 2 hours to do it. I was visiting. This like semi-old, it was like a Georgian house, and I can clearly distinctly remember, we walked into this one room, and my family walked ahead of me, and they went on this massive rug, and I can just clearly hear, like from the right ear, someone screaming, "Get off the rug," and I was like, huh? But no one else heard it, and I thought, I went to my dad, I was like, the man told us to get off the rug, and I was like, who? I looked up at this painting, right, don't know why, but my brain was like, him. And my dad was like, yeah, nah. We went around the whole house. Towards the end, my dad goes, go on, tell the lady at the front desk your story. My dad thought that she was going to, like, put it down and, like, you know, say, oh, yeah, no, it's just, you know. But she just turned around, she pulls out a book of all the people who have been said they've either seen this one particular bloke or, like heard him say stuff to them. My dad just went,
oh.
So that was the scariest one. Apart from, I've had several night terrors that sort of bled over to the real world, but they're a bit too creepy. That's my three standout ones. That and the time I saw Black Shark, which was when I was, again, I was in Army Cadets, and I saw, like, this massive dog, except he was more brown in colour, and you're like, just sprint across. And that was the closest, like, I looked up, and then I was like, oh, yeah, no, it's Black Shark, that's the closest thing. I also saw it, like, used to have a shadow that watched me while I slept. And then
that's all what I've been... We've all seen the Shadow Man.
Oh, yeah, we've all had one of those. But then after, he was soon replaced by what I've been told was a brownie, and it was like this little creature with like massive long ears, and it was like sort of leathery, and it had like brown skin and like a snout. And then the last thing I saw was like a large, tall, blurry but brown figure, which I have been told was a fae. Again, I'm not saying this is all real. It's just stuff I've seen.
Yeah, it's stuff you've experienced.
Really, yeah. And I saw it walk out of one tree and into another tree and then disappear. And that was when I was very young. So that's...
Sounds like a dryad.
I do have a photo that I tell people is of a fae, and if I can find it, I will send it to you.
I would love to see it.
But it's like, because I haven't been able to, because it's like a clear mark, and you can see, like, legs, and it's like, it's just a black shape on the screen. But, like, you can clearly see wings, a head, and, like, two, like, legs. And because it was a photo I took of a Crusader Kings 2 game. And in the corner, like, reflection, I was like, that's not a mark on the phone. That's not from the computer. I do have it somewhere on my PC. So we'll have a look if I can find it. I should have thought about bringing it on today. But,
fine.
Yeah.
I do have a question about Black Shuck, though.
Yes.
Because... I actually did research on that for our Hellhounds video today.
There we go.
But it seems that it is a bad thing 100% of the time to see, like that it is an omen of something, some tragedy or even death. The Welsh one is a little bit more angry, the Gwilchi, which just immediately rips you to shreds. In Connecticut, which is about the most English place outside of England, there is a black dog of the Hanging Hills, who apparently, according to Connecticut folklore, if you see him once, it is for joy, something good is going to happen to you. If you see him twice, it is, for sorrow, so something bad's going to happen to you. And if you see him a third time, you're going to die. So does Black Shuck, where you're from, have any of the same...
Black Shuck normally is like... It's a million different. The normal one is it's quite a bit like the. I'm gonna mispronounce that, and I'm sorry to anyone from Scotland. The Carrion Egg, which is a bit like a banshee. Like if you see her, someone in the family was going to die, and most famously, she was heard wailing or seen the night before, and the night of the Glencoe massacre. Which I won't go into because it'll take me way too long to explain.
Can you give us the Cliff's Notes since most of our viewers are American?
So the Glencoe massacre, basically, I think it was just after James was deposed, the Clan MacDonalds didn't swear fealty to William, I think it was William of Orange, didn't swear fealty to William in time, even though there was a bit of tomfoolery. They did delay it because the MacDonalds were a very stubborn Highland clan, and then they were made an example of by some other Scottish lords who had sort of like really like closed in and were like, yes, we're the popular kids now. And so they sent in a load of guys who were then. But this is why anyone who understands like when you're a guest in someone else's house, how bad this is. All of the soldiers slept in the MacDonald clan's houses. Then in the middle of the night, woke up, and then in the most polite terms I can, removed the throats of, opened up the throats of many of the men, women, and children, set fire to the homes. Many women then died freezing in the moors. I know this isn't really Black Shuck, but I suppose it's related. It's still regarded as one of the most horrific events in Scottish history, and
which is saying something.
Oh yeah, the Scottish people that were involved in organising it are considered absolute traitors. In fact, I know obviously he's got some controversial, but Count Dankula does a very good video on it, and he explains why it's still there's a lot of animosity towards the English. In fact, I actually used to know some of the descendants, and really? that story still reverberates with them.
Understandably,
it's literally because it's horrific. But the main, like, the legend is that the crown egg, and again, I do apologize if I'm not very good at pronouncing Gaelic. Like, she was seen at least on one of the, either the night before or the night of, mm-hmm. or both, and so that's the sort of the big link to Black Chuck, is because he was seen in a similar light. Mm-hmm. So he was seen like a banshee, where it was an omen of death in the family, and then in some stories it's if you see him it's you, mm-hmm. And then in some stories it's just bad luck,
family,
bad omen, yeah. Like bad harvest, bad anything. In fact, when Saxon and then later Norman and English folklore sort of like merges, it's almost always harvests. We were obsessed, like the Saxons and the English were obsessed with bad harvests. If you mm-hmm. see it's bad harvests. The interesting side with the rhyme you're doing, that's crows. In our folklore, it's if you see a crow, it's the amount of crows you see. So if you see one crow, it's one for joy, two for sorrow, three for a girl, four for a boy. And like that goes on. So it's the number of crows you see, which is interesting. I've never heard that rhyme associated with Black Chuck.
Connecticut. Dude.
That's probably if it's, they've probably just sort of gone, well, I remember this vaguely.
So probably.
That's mush.
Connecticut does have a good amount of, like, pretty intense ghost stories, but in terms of folklore, they're kind of lame. That was the one thing I wanted to ask before we go to questions is, like, you know, in the U.S., you definitely hear a lot of, like, ghost stories growing up. We're very into folklore mm-hmm. and telling ghost stories around the campfire. But that's the thing is, it's mostly ghost stories and urban legends. What was it like growing up in England as far as ghost tales and monsters and things? Is that something that people have any solid belief in over there, or do you at least tell stories to one another?
We tell ghost stories, but they tend to be more attached to, like, Victoria. Like, if you're like, York is the most haunted town or most mm-hmm. haunted city in the UK, and that will be where a lot of ghost stories come from. So you have, like, obviously that's one of the few places in the world you actually get Roman ghosts. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a place in Scotland where you actually there's like a pre-Celtic ritual ghost who's meant to appear, mm-hmm. but he appears less and less every year, which is very interesting. It's the mm-hmm. only Neolithic ghost I've ever heard of.
Interesting.
Most of the time here, it was for me growing up, so I was homeschooled, so I have a very different like sort of experience of youth. And I do most school kids.
Right.
I learned about Bloody Mary very late, but my original idea with Bloody Mary was the Queen.
Yeah.
The idea was that she would come and get you, and then that sort of evolved into the mirror one, which was sort of came back from America. for me, it was just regular ghosts like living in the attic. There was never really a set theme, and if it was, it was normally something like Black Chuck, like don't go out or don't go into the woods too late. I hate to use this word, it's going to upset a lot of people, but the fairies will get you, because that was the awful version of the English, which whenever I've spoken to a Gaelic speaker, they get very upset if I use the word fairy, so I tend to say fae.
It's an interesting term with a lot of mm-hmm. history, but this is what we're going to be talking about next week when we're having Piper on, because her master's is in folklore, so we're mm-hmm. going to be talking about the Fae. The term is so broad. It's so broad.
And you got
17, 18, 19-year-old girls on TikTok who are talking about, you know, I'm a witch and the Fae, and I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It makes me incredibly angry, because I know a fair bit. Unsurprisingly, I know quite a lot about Greek folklore.
Wonder why.
Yeah, to be fair, also a lot of Slavic folklore. I like stuff like the Leshy, the Domovoy, mm-hmm. Which I based a lot of my, which I'm writing, the second script I'm writing, a lot of that's based more on Slavic and Greek folklore. But in British folklore or English in English folklore, you have stuff like, I think there is a Welsh and Scottish equivalent, I'm not sure about Irish, but the red cap.
Yeah. There's a Cornish, the Tommyknocker, is very similar. But the Tommyknocker's underground.
Yes, the Tommyknocker I love because it has completely different meanings where you, like, there is a Scottish version of the Tommyknocker, and there is an American, I know there is an American version of the Tommyknocker, but no, the Irish version's the most interesting, because the Irish version is that, I may be mixing this up again, apologise to anyone if I mixed them up, the Irish version is they help you and they're knocking to let go, get out, because this mind's about to collapse. And then the Scottish version is, we want to knock it down because we find it hilarious. Which, to me, I think is the more realistic version, because when you look at, I mean, obviously Piper won't like know more about it, but the Fae almost always have one thing, and that is, we want to mess with humans.
Yeah.
This is like how can we mess with humans today? Mm-hmm. Which is again why I like the red cap, because it just goes along after a battle and goes dip. I like, you've just decorated my cap. Thank you for dying.
Yeah, we did our video on goblins last it was probably December. That was one of the ones we came across, was the red caps that are just like these murderous goblins that live out in the woods. Like and I did just find the wording for it. So in Welsh, the Fae are Itilwith Teg, and it means the same thing as it does in Irish, the Fair Folk. And they come in five varieties, which are Elion, that's not right, Echlion, that's a hard word. There's four, this word is Ellyllon, Wales. The Cobnanai, the Bubacha, the Bubachod, the Gureged Anun, and the Gwychion. God, it is hard to pronounce that language.
I do have one question for you, because I was curious about this. In the UK, we're taught hobgoblins, like, first originated in World War II, and they specifically, on air raids, would take out the engines of British fighter pilots and British bomber crews. Do you have a similar thing in the US, or is it?
That's not what hobgoblins are to us. Our hobgoblins got over here in the 1800s. Yeah, so at least to my understanding, the American version of the hobgoblin comes out of the English and Scottish hobgoblins and brownies. And in ours, it's not that they will, they're not necessarily mischievous in a negative way. It's more that they'll, like, take a block of cheese and move it, like, which could just be an example, an explanation for people misplacing things. But, no, the deal here with hobgoblins, they're almost like akin to gremlins. Like, there's a set of rules, like, respect your hobgoblin and it'll leave you gifts. Don't respect your hobgoblin or be mean to it and it'll, like, you know, cut your brake lines. So that's kind of how they are for us. They can be either good or bad.
I suppose that's kind of similar, because obviously the brownie is obviously the direct version of that, as you say. But the hobgoblin, like the pilot stories that I read, were always like they were leaving offerings to the hobgoblins so that they wouldn't like chew through the cables and burn down the plane. In Slavic folklore, you have the domovoy. And I love the domovoy. There is also a female counterpart of the domovoy who tends to be the more evil one. But the domovoy, from what I might be mixing them up again, but the domovoy, like, as long as you feed it and like you're kind to it and say nice things and like you say thank you for cleaning the house, it just cleans the house. However, if you're a non-nice person, I cleaned it up because I didn't want YouTube to censor you.
Right.
If I swear, if you're a non-nice person. The domovoy just causes absolute havoc. It's the same with Leshy, but that's more wooden stuff. In fact, there was a story I read of a woman who lost her mobile phone, but she was a practicing witch. So she left offerings for the Leshy, did a ritual, went back and was like, basically, if you find my phone, can you like leave it at the edge of the forest? Went back to sleep, woke up next morning, phone was on a stump, left for her on a stump. And, like, I heard it, like, I'm not saying it's 100% true, but I low-key believe that because it's the stump detail. If it was like, oh yeah, the phone left me at the edge of the forest, it's the weird detail of it was left on a tree stump, like it was like an agreed place to put it. And I low-key, like, that makes it, I know it's very unbelievable because you'd think the less you would have a bit, put up a bit more of a fight with deforestation, but just that little
love
bit.
Love that detail.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're going to hop into Super Chats in a second, but one thing that I just have to say on the subject, because we're talking about losing things and then making a deal to find them. You know how I lost my sunglasses a year ago? Do you remember this? I was complaining about it.
Yeah.
So I, when I lost them, I looked everywhere. Here's the thing. I left them at my parents' place.
Mm-hmm.
I left them at my parents' place on a table in the living room. And they disappeared. When I came back from them, they weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
I searched everywhere for them. My car, Christian's car, my mom's car, Ainsley's car, my room, Ainsley's room. Like, I searched everywhere. Nobody in my family could find these sunglasses. I even, like, tore apart every bit of my car. My glove box, my console, mm-hmm. my back seat. Looked everywhere. I got home from work on Friday evening. Getting ready to drive down to Philly for a concert. And I reach into my... my console, I can't remember what I was looking for, but I reach in there, stick my hand down, sunglasses. I had checked that spot numerous times.
Yeah.
And a couple days earlier, I remember saying to myself out loud, man, I wish I had my sunglasses, like while I was in the car.
Yeah.
So I was driving and I'd take a turn that takes me straight west and the sun's like right here when I get out of work. And I was just like, man, I wish I had my sunglasses. Not even a week later. Right. And I'm like, I know those weren't there. I know for a fact they were not there.
That's wild.
But that said, it is time to transition over to the Q&A section. Y'all have been very quiet, so I hope you have built up some questions. I know this has been a bit outside of our usual topic of discussion, but I hope people have questions. I would love to get stuff, especially if it's stuff that that Ryan can answer, you know, about Daddy Alexander.
Well, so far, the only...
Oh, boy, there's one.
There we go. Well, we got a super chat from... the first one was from Douglas Ives for $2, and there's nothing there.
Well, thank you, Douglas.
So thank you, Douglas. And then the next one is from Hannah Farmer for $20. Thank you very much. It says, what are your favorite Diogenes stories aside from the one told?
You got one? I guess
it's for both.
Checking, because I have a story, but I think it's not Diogenes. No, it's Diogenes. Yes. Okay. Right. I'm happy that I do have this right. So, I don't know if you've heard about this, either of you two. Have you heard about the featherless biped?
That is my go-to.
Do you want to tell it? Because I told the earlier story.
I don't remember all the details, so you go for it.
Okay. So, basically, Plato, who was a student of Socrates, I am 50-50 on Plato. I'm not his biggest fan, don't really hate him, mainly because Plato's Allegory of the Cave is really Socrates' Allegory of the Cave, and Plato just published it. But, you know, stealing your mentor's work is not bad. So Plato came out and was like, a human being is a featherless biped. So Diogenes comes along and goes, he plucks, like straight up plucks a chicken, goes up to the steps of Plato's school and goes, there is your human, which forced Plato to then change the definition of a human as a featherless biped without claws. I might be wrong on that, I'm not sure. But yeah, it's just... He's just an amazing, Diogenes was absolutely insane. He was very commonly, he obviously he lived in a barrel, which he would take everywhere with him, which didn't have the best toilet or restroom facilities, translating. So he would quite commonly, if he was upset with you, would open the little porthole and just wee on your shoes. And if he was really upset with you, he would use projectiles, which I'll leave to your imagination.
Use projectiles.
That is a very gentle way to say that.
Yeah. I think my favorite is the story of when Antisthenes, his mentor, tried to, and I had to look it up to make sure I got all the names right, but was just getting really sick of him because he was basically just hounding him constantly. He would sleep outside of Antisthenes' house just to bug him, to beg him to take him on as a student.
Yeah.
And at one point, Antisthenes starts beating him with a stick because he's being so annoying, and Diogenes goes, "Strike, for you will find no wood hard enough to keep me away from you, so long as I think you've something to teach."
That's awesome. That's great.
Beat me as much as you want, I will learn to read.
And you're going to be the one to teach me.
Quickly, if I can segue very briefly into something Socrates did. When they tried to rescue him from prison, they actually left him because he just kept asking them why they were trying to free him. Socrates was just he did some shady stuff, but we ignore that. He was just, I love Greek, ancient Greek philosophers. They were just insane.
Yeah, so many great characters, and I remember with the whole Alexander was actually a woman thing, and the argument that
Mom Lenny follows me. I don't know why. I don't know when that happened, but she follows me.
She unblocked me.
Maybe she's turning a new leaf.
Well, she has stopped. She has, for the most part, stopped with the Rome nonsense. So good for her. Let's see. Iz goes, "You expect me to have questions? Ha, I give you money and gifts and be your friends in return. Can you tell Archie I love him?" Yes, Archie. Come here, buddy.
He's sleeping under here.
He's awake. Oh, yeah, buddy. Yeah, because I called him. Come here.
Also, real quick, what's the...
come here.
What's the roast of Mattis on Saturday? Oh,
this is something that we planned last night.
Yeah.
There's going to be a roast of me.
By who?
The Discord.
Oh, jeez.
So we're gonna live stream it. It's gonna be a roast.
Oh, good lord, that's dangerous. I would do that on Twitch.
You're welcome to, probably, yeah. You're welcome to come and be in studio and roast me or be roasted.
Oh, boy. When is this? What time on Saturday?
Probably 7 p.m. on Saturday.
Okay.
Let's see. Behold a man. My mom says got to hop on a call, but great podcast. Aw. Thanks, Mom. And she said, eat your veggies.
Smart.
What's a veg? What's a vegetable?
I think there's some weird green thing.
Oh, okay. I don't green is my favorite color, but I don't think it tastes good.
Green. Brighton doesn't eat blue.
Hammond for $5 says, "What do you call a wizard that loves pastries? A pyromancer."
I love that. I love puns. I love
puns are solid.
I did a pun earlier. I did a pun video on TikTok earlier, which I can repeat, but people will hate me.
Fair enough.
I do have to ask, since you're here and since you were here last night, I need to ask your opinion. Doors or wheels?
Wheels.
Okay.
I made that clear in the chat.
I just wanted to make sure. I just wanted to make sure, in case people weren't here last night.
I just thought of another variable for that equation.
What?
Roller skates. No one I've seen has mentioned roller skates yet.
Well, you know, what I pointed out to Kat? Kat is team doors. I pointed out that in this room, there are, if you count anything with hinges as a door, and you count windows as doors, this room has about 11 doors.
Mm-hmm.
However, each of these guitar amps has about 8 wheels on it.
Mm-hmm.
Each of these chairs has 5 wheels, so 10 wheels. Each of our microphones has 5 wheels.
Yep.
Tell me there are more doors. And I was like, this room is a microcosm of the world. And she was like, this is not a representative sample. And I was like, is it not, though?
There was also an interesting one about blades of grass versus hair in the world. And I did the math. There are more hairs on, I can't remember what it was. There are more hairs on a single human body. Oh, no, sorry, no, that was it. There are more hairs on the collective human bodies, just top of head's hair, than there are blades of grass in the world, period. That's not including body hair, that's not including any other animal with hair. So it is by far hair. But I found that interesting. I'm also amazed that that information, that data, is readily available on a very fast Google search. Like, you have to do some math, but it's not that hard.
Oh, you said smelly breath.
Say, the absolutely, defining, end to debate on Wolves versus Doors immediately is the fact that every door must have a hinge, therefore, and every hinge is technically a very tiny wheel.
I agree with you.
So if you have one long hinge, each door has to have a minimum of two wheels,
mm-hmm.
right? That means that for every door in existence, there is double the amount of wheels, even if you don't include every other wheel that isn't attached to a door.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, that ends it. It's over.
Yeah.
Exactly. Doors people, BTFO.
Iz said for $5. Thank you, Iz. Get both Aidens there. Of course, we won't be holding back. Yeah, that's as to be expected. Also, Taylor, accurate statement, but mildly concerning in an out-of-context scenario, says, did you know that you have an above-average number of legs for a human? And they're right.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, my brain went somewhere else with that. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, that's where mine went first.
Ryan,
but then,
you saucy man.
Yes.
Then, the title of this episode is Do You Simp for Alexander?
That's fair. Yeah, fair enough.
Valid.
Well, afterwards, I'm going to rename it to Why You Should Simp for Alexander.
Smart plan.
Yeah, because we had to find out if the video was going to tell us that we should, but...
And we have found out.
Clearly, we have discovered that you should.
I must admit that I tell you what, I would love to come on if you can find someone who's really obsessed with Napoleon, because my other main thing on TikTok is just...
I know some Napoleon. People.
My other main thing on TikTok is just annoying Napoleon fans. I don't even really have that much of a stake, but Napoleon fans get really upset when I say Alexander was better than he was.
I would love to see that argument. We should start hosting debates. That'd be fun.
I would love, as long as it's a fun debate and it's not going to get everyone involved cancelled. I would be up for that. Napoleon, anyone who's on Cromwell's side, there are some serious Cromwell fans. The Cromwell fan base hates me because I did an entire hit piece on him on YouTube.
I find it very, very odd that there is a Cromwell fan base.
There's a fan base for everything on the internet, let's be real.
There's a staunch... I mean, I had to, in my Cromwell video on YouTube, I did openly admit that he did help the Jewish communities in England, and that was pretty much the only nice thing I said. Because I have to admit it from I openly said the video, I hate Cromwell, I'm going to be biased, enjoy. Mm-hmm. And then I was as unbiased as I could be, but I will admit, I recently did videos on Catherine the Great, and I discovered that I don't actually like her. My opinion on her changed greatly, but my opinion on Cromwell didn't change. The more I researched him, in fact, the more I hated him. There is very, very... I've had threats from people for making bad stuff about Cromwell. People get very...
Cromwell was an objectively bad person, though.
Oh, yeah. There's people that argue that the stuff he did was normal for the time period, and
that
I'm like...
That doesn't make it okay.
Yeah. That's no Vikings...
Just because it was normal to oppress the Irish for a solid 1,000 years doesn't mean you should do it.
Valid. Being a very heavily Irish person, valid.
I can, therefore I should, is not a path to good decision-making.
No, never.
Also,
never.
Captain Alien says, wheels, a regular semi and trailer has 18 wheels. If you have double or triple, that's 30 wheels, I believe, for 3 trailers. Heavy hauling wide loads has ungodly amount of wheels. That's true.
Yeah. Boats.
Do boats have wheels?
Containers.
What about containers?
The containers that are used for shipping and container ships. That's a lot of doors.
Yeah, but each of those doors has a hinge, therefore...
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm counting hinges. I'm on team wheels. I'm on team wheels, and a wheel is a pretty defined shape. I'm not going to count hinges. Those are just cylindrical rods, and that's not a wheel.
You're a cylindrical rod.
In a way,
if you think about it, so they're very cylindrical, yes, but what about the steam rollers that put roads down? You know, their massive front bit. That's technically a wheel.
Yeah, I'm not considering that a wheel.
That's a wheel, and that's what's in a hinge.
It's a wheel. Mm. It's a wheel.
The same thing that's in a hinge.
No, the hinge is the axle. The hinge is the axle. Hinge to door hinge, like, apparatus is axle to car, essentially. Like, you wouldn't consider a drive shaft to be a wheel. You wouldn't consider a log to be a wheel.
You wouldn't download a wheel.
You wouldn't download a car, would you? Yeah. I'm gonna agree to disagree with you on the hinge bit.
All right, fine. But we agree there are more wheels.
Yes. Oh, okay, I'm still on team wheels, but right. I like thinking of more variables that really just kind of like throw a wrench in the whole thing.
Hammond for $2 says, Napoleon fanboys, ask the historical Total War people. That's true. That is a good place to find Napoleon fanboys.
Another person to go after, because I will argue that he was completely useless, and the only reason we actually think about him is because Peter the Third pulled the Russian troops out of Prussia, is Frederick the Great. Totally useless and overrated, and I will stand by that statement.
We might have to do a show where you just explain that, because that is an opinion I don't usually hear. But Napoleonic history is not one of my strong suits.
Frederick the Great has some very hardcore fanboys, and I've literally only said that to annoy them. But okay.
All right. Douglas Eyes for $5, thank you, says, first time catching the show live, watching while I fold towels at work, love the show. Thank you, Douglas.
Thank you.
We appreciate that.
Yeah, the only reason I would like the Napoleonic era is purely because of Master and Commander and the other like naval warfare stories that come from that. So I'm big in that.
I know a couple of really good Nelson stories.
Yay.
Surprisingly, the British kid knows Nelson stories.
There's no shame in it. He's worth knowing about.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on John Paul Jones?
Do you know what? I don't know who that is.
Oh.
I bet they don't teach them.
They definitely don't teach him. They definitely don't teach him. But they don't even teach him here.
Yeah, we learned about him.
No, we didn't.
We
should do a history hut on JPJ.
I told you we could do that months ago.
Why haven't we?
You didn't do it.
Oh, you wanted me to do the video?
Yeah, I wanted you to do the video.
Oh, I can do the video then.
Okay, then next time we film, you do the video.
Sounds good. Go ahead.
Because you said you wanted to talk about Owen Glendwyr, I actually looked him up because the only real stuff I know about him is off of Horrible Histories and the one song they did. And the only thing I really knew was that he was meant to come back if England ever threatened Wales again. And I thought, I mean, I know a lot about what English and Welsh histories, and given the last couple of hundred years especially, he should have probably come back a couple of times.
Which figure is this?
Owen Glendwyr.
Oh, I've never heard of that guy. Who's that? I did my research papers on him in college. He's the same as King Arthur. They said that he was going to come back whenever the Welsh people were facing oppression by the English. I don't know, maybe he was like, next time the Welsh people win their independence and face oppression again, because I think he had too much faith in the Welsh to actually try and resist.
That's fair.
Also, in his defense, the Welsh haven't tried to resist.
Also, Captain Alien, for your information, shipping containers have four doors, not two, and I respect the fact that you're mentioning that you've hauled a lot of wheels in semis, but being on the side of more wheels than doors, have you ever seen how many containers are fitted onto a container ship? It's a lot. Still on the side of wheels, though. Anyway.
All right. Iz says, for $5, thank you, Iz, I can, therefore I should is my life motto. Why do you think I'm such a hot mess?
That's valid. As well.
At least you're self-aware, Iz.
That's technically Alexander's motto as well.
True.
I know too many people who live by that motto, and it's not a good
idea. It's kind of an inversion of the Veni, Vidi, Vici. It's instead of I came, I saw, I conquered, it's I saw, I came, I conquered.
I guess.
Yeah.
In certain circles, yes.
What time is it?
It is 8:24. We have six minutes until we're...
Yeah, we have 6 minutes. If you have burning questions, now is the time. Kira Ord says, this show has quickly become my favorite and look forward to every episode. Aw, well, thank you, Kira.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. And she even got her mom to look into the show because she got her degree in history.
We love that.
Love to see it.
We love to see it.
While we got a moment here, in a little bit of a pause, Ryan, do you want to pitch yourself? You want to give us your socials? And we have your at in the description, but I just want to give you a shot to, explain who you are.
Sure. So obviously, I started off on TikTok, and my TikTok is History Daddy. Just doing comedy sketch. I started off doing what everyone does on TikTok, just random stuff, and then I did my first Alexander sketch. It went viral. And now I focus, I don't even really use the audios anymore. I focus pretty much very short sketches on history on TikTok, and they're very broad. They're not very deeply historical. And if you want a more historical outlook, I do sort of 20 minute a pop videos on YouTube, which are still comedy based. It's still focused on comedy, but because it's not TikTok, I can get away with a lot more. So my comedy is it tends to be a lot more dark humor. So if you're more dark offensive humor, that's like go for it. Yeah, that I tend to focus more on like long form informative content on YouTube with comedy mixed in. Mm-hmm. I then have regular stuff, Twitter, any social I can get my hands on. I recently joined Odyssey because that seemed like an up and coming one. Yeah, that's pretty much.
Right. Is it History Daddy on all of them?
Yes, History Daddy on everything.
All right.
Yeah. But I do have one quick question to ask.
Sure.
Who do you think King Arthur is? Who do you think King Arthur was in history, the real person? Because I have a theory that I think you'll disagree
about. About a specific individual?
I believe so. The actual story of how the Saxons came over, from what I've read, isn't like there's a lot of legend mixed in with it,
mm-hmm.
to the point where we're not like 100% sure.
Well, they came over twice.
Like, yes. Yes, but the main idea is like that we've been the Saxons have been working as mercenaries for the Romans, and we're like the Romans are gone now. This seems fun, but the actual like negotiations amongst the Celtic kingdoms, which we know horrendously little about, which agitates me. That gap, mm-hmm. where the Celtic kingdoms would be so interesting because I want to know about that dynamic of moving back to pagan roots while looking yeah. at Christianity and Roman culture. It's a very interesting time period, and no one wrote it down, except for the Romans, who are currently running away.
And Gildas. And Bede.
Yeah.
But they were giving sermons, so...
yeah. I mean, so I think that Arthur... One, because I have a Celtic Myth and Legends book written by Peter Berefidelis in the back, where Arthur is actually the villain, and he's described as a Saxon in one of the stories. And I think that he may have been one, like, either a Saxon that switched sides in one of the various wars, or an amalgamation of various Celtic lords that led an alliance, because that is the only way, and that he was sort of like amalgamated. I think he was probably multiple people. He definitely did exist, but he was also definitely nowhere near as strong as a lot of the stories suggest. And I also think that he like may have been just straight up killed, like Spartacus style, on the battlefield.
Yeah, the idea that he was a Saxon is odd to me, but the one that I do see the amalgamation argument, but I don't think he was an amalgamation, but I do think it was a title. I think Arthur is a title. That is my opinion because of the Welsh language. The fact that if you take certain Welsh words and put them together a few hundred years later, you could get something like Arthur. For example, if it was Ardri, which would be High King, or if you did Arthur, I think. There's one in which it becomes basically like Great Bear. So Great Bear and High King are the two titles that I think you could get out of it. And then especially with the addition of Pendragon, which could be Pendrech. Which could be High King, Great Dragon, which, in my opinion, knowing Welsh folklore about dragons, sounds very possible. But yeah, I don't know if I could name a specific historical figure, yeah. But Ambrosius Aurelianus is the one that I was taught is most likely Arthur. But looking at it, I think the stories about it, first of all, if you read like Nennius, who obviously was writing a little bit later... he says that Arthur, though there were many more noble than he, was elected 12 times to lead the Britons. So it sounds to me like it was one specific person, probably a lesser nobleman who had shown some sort of strategic and tactical prowess, but we've lost that person's name over time.
I've heard that he was a Roman multiple times. It's one of the, like, after him being, because obviously, like the idea of, like, the Welsh legends wasn't itself, because obviously Welsh, originally comes from the Saxon word Waelas, which means foreigner, which was
kind of ironic.
Kind of ironic. I mean, they did that on purpose, 100%.
They called themselves the Cymry.
Yeah. Because the, Germanic people at that point in time, obviously the Romans knew very well. There's a reason the Romans never managed to get into the Germanic tribes. So the Germanic tribes were like very much like, if it's ours, it's ours, and if it's yours, it's ours. Mm. Which the Scandinavians then ran with later on.
Yeah.
I've entirely lost my train of thought. But I think if he wasn't Celtic, he definitely wasn't Saxon. The only other reason I say that is because of the way he was co-opted by Saxons later on.
There has to be a connection.
Tintagel Castle was built because English kings, at this point, like England had been amalgamated, were obsessed with becoming King Arthur. In fact, the idea of ruling the entirety of the British Isles comes from English kings wanting to be Arthur, because Arthur in legend ruled the entirety of the British Isles.
Right.
So a lot of people will often blame Arthur for the English urge, even though technically it wasn't until after the Anglo-Norman period started, and which is my get-out clause. all the bad things that happened, I blame it on the Anglo-Normans. It was just this idea of I'm Arthur because Arthur is amazing, so I'm going to take it all. I don't think he could be Celtic, because Celtic leaders that don't, like, if you look at Brennus, he was the last really successful Celtic king, and I don't think there would be a Celtic, and this may sound very bad, but I don't think there was in that time period any Celts left that were that tactically well-minded to bring that legend to bear. I think it probably would have been Roman.
That is the thing about the Arthur legend, is that he's not, first of all, he's extraordinarily successful against the Saxons. Yes. Brennus was extraordinarily successful against the Romans, which is why Brennus is special.
And the Greeks.
Yeah.
And the Greeks.
Yeah, so Brennus is special because he was going up against much better disciplined armies. But with Arthur specifically, the idea that he was a member of the Romano-British, like, civil elite comes out a lot, because the Celts, the Welsh at the time, were not using heavy cavalry. That was a distinctly Roman military tactic. The Saxons also weren't doing it. So in all of the stories we get, the most contemporary stories we have of Arthur, he's leading cavalry charges, which leads people to believe that he's probably a member of the Romano-British culture, which means that he could have been fully Latin, but it's also entirely possible, in fact, it would be probable, given the time period, that he was probably of both Celtic and Latin stock.
That makes more sense, actually. that makes more sense.
Yeah, so he was probably a low-ranking, military or civil leader who was then elected. It doesn't seem like he was a traditional, hereditary high king, which is kind of the way he's painted. For example, the story that Disney tells, the classic Sword in the Stone story, which I can't remember exactly when that part emerges, but the idea of Arthur not being... Yeah, that's what I thought. The idea of Arthur not being noble at birth, or being noble at birth but hidden away to not be, so people didn't know, that one seems to actually make it all the way through all of the other revisions, because originally it's Arthur wins 12 battles, and the final one at Mons Baden, he routs the Saxons so hard that they retreat over the sea and don't come back for 100 years. That's Arthur's great triumph in Nennius's account of events. But if you go and you look at the later, Le Morte d'Arthur, he's conquered the whole world. He's gotten to China. It's a fascinating case study in how folk heroes emerge and evolve over time. But it's it seems very exactly. unlikely to me that, you know, he was anything more than a prince.
In later revisions, there's actually hints that parts of Alexander's story was added in.
I would 100% believe that.
Like, any revision that was happened after, like, the 1100s was almost always from the French, and the French added in stuff like the Round Table, the lady. I think the Lady of the Lake might have actually been from an earlier story, but almost completely different in how it goes down. The Saxon revisions were mostly just like, oh, yeah, no, Arthur will come back and defend the Britons, and then the Saxons were like, well, I suppose we're technically Britons. No, you're not. You're just
building the Britons?
Castle and hoping.
Just as
I know we're at time, but I want to get one last thing in.
Okay, one last thing, then we've got two more super chats.
What was it? It's gone. What was I going to say? Shit. Oh, yeah. Well, do you know when the earliest mention of Arthur in literature is? Because this is fascinating. It is less than a century after his death. Everyone thinks that Arthur is not mentioned for hundreds of years, that he's this folk hero that emerges around the time of Nennius, who's writing in the 9th century. But Arthur's name is mentioned in a very, like, just passing way in Ygodothan, which is the story of, we believe it's the Battle of Cattræth, which is the Anglo-Saxons came over, and I believe it's Bebbanburg, actually, that this all takes place outside of, which ties into The Last Kingdom, if anybody's been watching. But the Anglo-Saxons come over, and the king of Godothan reaches out to all the other Celtic kings and says, hey, we got this, these Saxons are back, they landed, you know, because Arthur had driven them out at the beginning of the century. We get to 600 AD, and the king of Regeth is, hey, we need help. I think it's Urien of Regeth, if I remember correctly. He says, we need help, everybody's got to come together and help us push out the Saxon threat. And so they gather, I think it's 300 soldiers? It's either 150 or 300, but I think it's 300 soldiers to go to go and they feast for like a year at the palace in Godothan, and then they all march south. And the story itself, for the most part, is just a list of names, deeds, and how they died. of all of these great Welsh heroes who came to the battle, but all of them died, and it's written by Aneurin, who is claiming to be the sole survivor of the battle. Aneurin may have been a brother of Gildas, but that also may just be a later connection between the two to try and give them each credibility. But Aneurin writes Ygodothan, and has this one line where he's talking about a guy named Gurrarthur. Not saying that that's Arthur, but he says, Gurrarthur, who was not as great as Arthur, da-da-da-da-da, like, so it's literally name, he's not as cool as Arthur, and then his deeds. So it's clear that Arthur, in 600 AD, was a figure that poets, at the very least, were familiar with. So there must have been an Arthur, he must have been called Arthur by then. The question is, who was he, was that his name, or was it a title? But he is mentioned in 600 AD. So that I think is fascinating. But that is the one reason that I am so hardline that Arthur was a real person, even if he was in some way an amalgamation. But I want to get to these last two super chats so that we can so we can let you go to bed. Jeez, dude.
I'm not gonna go to bed for another couple of hours, I've got more research
to. So Sequitur Tenebris says, I know it's unrelated to tonight's stream, but can we get a video on the Wyoming zombie outbreak from 1848? Did you write that down?
I did write that down.
Nice. Yes, you will. Hammond for $5 said, here's a question. Why is England called England? It's the Angles that came over, not the Angles. We should be speaking English, not English.
I can't explain it in a brief sentence.
It's, I mean, it's really at that point kind of an etymology issue in the way linguistics works. The term Alfred came up with was Angleland, possibly because Anglia was already a place. And he wouldn't want it to get confused, so Angleland became England, because let's be realistic, Angleland sounds stupid. But he was hardline ride or die Angleland his entire life. And if you watch The Last Kingdom or Vikings, he says England. He would never have called it England. Nobody from that time period would ever have called it England.
That bugs me, and he's like, I just have one dream, a united England. I'm like, who are you? Teddy Roosevelt. Like,
yeah, exactly. But, all right, well, the ant people can also go on the list. all right, well, I think that takes us to about the end of the show. We got to get ready for that that movie night. Yes. You have plugged yourself, so we don't need to do that. But yeah, is there any? Do you have any final thoughts you would like to say before we end the show?
No, obviously that you know I've got plenty of other historical characters I'd like to. I'd love to talk about Ethelfled, the Lady of Mercia. So if you ever want me to come back on, I'll.
Oh, we can absolutely have an entire show dedicated to the Last Kingdom.
I need to catch up last season, but definitely the real Ethelfled is a lot more badass than the show.
Yeah. But I would absolutely do a show about that, do an episode. So let's definitely do that. And yes, Taylor, I will try and get the blue hair done this week.
Oh, I want to see that. I'm very excited for this.
Kill me. All right. Teddy Roosevelt is King of England.
Jeez.
All right. Well, right.
A sketch of BBC. There's actually a BBC sketch about an American guy who comes over and he's taking DNA test and he turns out he's related to a Welsh prince. And it's like, it's this really funny because they're talking to each other in Cymru, I think that's the language. And I probably said that wrong. And they're talking to each other and they're like, he's an idiot. And it's just like this whole argument where this American guy's going, no, I am the Prince of Wales. Where's my throne? And it's funny. I definitely recommend it.
I'll have to take a look. All right.
Really quickly, someone wants you to spell the thing that you said last.
Oh, Igodothan. It is Y space G O D D I N. Igodothan.
Wow. Yeah.
Welsh.
Yep.
And you're going to be able to find it. Just be prepared. It is not written in modern English. It is written in modern English, like in terms of the words. But it is very much not written the way modern English poets and authors write. It is that archaic, early medieval, bardic poetry that is meant to be recited at various events. So that will just about do it for the night. Ryan, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I think talking about the Viking invasion of England would be a fun episode too, so we'll definitely make a point of doing that. But we got to hop off. So thank you, everyone who tuned in. And thank you to everyone who tuned in afterwards to watch the replay. I'm Aiden Mattis.
I'm Aiden Thornberry.
I'm Ryan Day.
And this has been the Lore Lodge. Thank you all for coming.
Hello.